I'm Stephen M. Hall, MD, an integral physician.
And I'm Grace Porter, a licensed psychotherapist. And together, we're the 7 Tools, a company focused on your personal growth and transformation.
And you are here with us for the Change for Good Summit. This year, we're focusing on building resilience in anxious times.
This summit is full of deep conversation and practical advice. We hope you enjoy this interview.
So now let's dive in. So hi, everyone. This is Steve Hall with the 7 Tools. And welcome back to this year's Change for Good Summit, Building Resilience in Anxious Times. I'm very happy to be speaking with Lauren Walker, author, teacher, world traveler, developer of energy medicine yoga, and caretaker of the earth. She doesn't really call herself that last one, but I made that up for her because she clearly sees the importance of and really cares deeply about the health of the earth as the foundation upon which our own individual health is built. So, and I really think that we as a species really need to grow that awareness until it becomes this immutable force behind all of our actions. And I know, just from what little I know about Lauren, that she really is working towards that. So I appreciate that. So Lauren is author of Energy Medicine Yoga, Amplify the Healing Power of Your Yoga Practice, and then also Energy Medicine Yoga Prescription. So both of these books won the Nautilus Silver Award for Best Mind-Body Publications. So congratulations on that. And she's been teaching yoga and meditation since 1997. So she must have started when she was in first grade or something. And she created Energy Medicine Yoga while teaching at Norwich University. And she teaches, do you call it EM yoga or energy medicine yoga? You want me to?
Either of them works.
Okay. Yeah. So she teaches energy medicine yoga across the U.S. and internationally, has been featured many times in Yoga Journal, that Mantra Plus, Yoga Digest, and she published a feature article about her yoga work in the New York Times. And she was recently named as one of the top 100 most influential yoga teachers in America. So for more of her work, see emyoga.net. So welcome, Lauren. I'm really glad you could be with us today. So happy.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
So could you tell us a little more about yourself and how you came to your current work?
Sure. So I had been practicing and teaching yoga for quite some time, and I came to a bit of a crossroads in my yoga life. I had opened a yoga studio, and that was undergoing a really challenging transformation. And I ended up, I had a partner, a business partner that was quite unethical. And I ended up leaving that whole situation and leaving the United States as well. I moved up to Canada as a war resistor when we went into the Iraq war. And I was kind of done with the yoga world. And I was going through some really challenging times because I loved where I lived and I sort of felt like I was in exile from both my town and my country. And I met someone who introduced me to the work of Donna Eden in a quite powerful way. He had been dying, basically, from an undiagnosed brain aneurysm. Undiagnosed for 7 years, lying on the couch, essentially dying. Nobody knew what was wrong with him. And he said the only thing that kept him alive was doing this work that he read out of a book by this woman named Donna Eden. And that really sparked me. And I had just heard of Donna Eden a month before I left the United States. One of my girlfriends had come over and shared that she had just been to this very powerful event with this woman named Donna Eden. So that's two times in two different countries within a month. And that really sparked my curiosity. So I went and did a workshop with Donna, and that workshop literally changed my life and my entire trajectory. She is such a profound and brilliant teacher. And more than that, she really is a living master. And I don't use that word lightly because I've met a lot of people that would like to have that mantle. But she really is the real deal. And as well, she has this heart-centered generosity of spirit that I had never seen before, that I expected to find in the yoga world all over, and I hadn't encountered it. And here it was in this energy person. And I really didn't know much about energy beyond what they teach you in the yoga world, which is so interesting because yoga is an energetic practice. But that has really been kind of subsumed by the more physical practices that are done most often in the Western world, where sort of I grew up in the yoga world. So I started studying with Donna. I just dove in feet first, and it literally changed my life. It changed how I viewed myself emotionally. It changed my spiritual path. It changed my physical path. And as I continue to study with her and life in its abundance of both beautiful things and challenging things, I had a lot of incredible challenges come down the pipeline. And I know 100% that I would not be here today if I did not have the tools of energy medicine that helped me overcome some really profound challenges. And I never stopped my own yoga practice, and I started to weave the teachings that I learned from Donna into my yoga practice. And after many years of practicing and starting to teach little bits here and there, I created this practice that is now known as Energy Medicine Yoga. And Donna helped me bring that out to the world, because once she saw what I was doing, she thought that it was pretty powerful as well. So I have the stamp of my teacher and mentor, and we're actually doing a class together. She was so moved by what this work was doing that we have an online 8-week course that's actually launching this month in October on Yoga Journal. And so it's really incredible to have that that available to everybody.
Well, thank you. Oh, that's quite a path. And so when most people hear the word yoga, they think of these like pretzel-like positions. But there's so much more to yoga. So can you explain how you think about yoga?
Yeah. So that's sort of what happened in the West, is yoga really did become this pretzel-making business. And really about sort of a gym membership thing more than anything now. But yoga really is about finding union. That's what the word means. Yoga, it means to yoke or to be one with. And so it's about finding union with yourself and ultimately with the larger forces around us. So I use the word divine energy. Some people use the word God, whatever it is that is your higher power. And that is often within, because of course we arise from the same forces that are all around us and that have created the world, is what created us. And so it's really coming into alignment with that. Certainly the physical body is a part of that. You need to have your instrument be strong and flexible and supple and able to carry you and your spark through the world. But to have an overemphasis on that physical form to the exclusion of the mental and the spiritual and your actions and your thinking mind and all of that is, I think, a real disservice to what yoga is meant to be and what the promise of yoga can be. And so absolutely, we do a strong asana practice with all of these energy techniques woven in, and it wouldn't look that dissimilar from a traditional yoga practice.
So but asanas are the positions, right?
The asanas, yes, the asanas are those physical positions, and not all of them are pretzel-y. Some of them are, but not all of them are. And they're really, you know, if you have a physical body, you can practice yoga. And what I love about energy medicine yoga is that even if you have serious limitations to your physical body, if you have any kind of paralysis or you're in a wheelchair or any disease patterns that is stopping functioning from part of the body, you can still practice this yoga, because we teach you all of these other ways to access your energy that doesn't require that you actually move the physical form to get the benefits. So, you know, if you're an Olympic athlete, and I've had Olympic athletes that I've worked with that have had incredible results, this practice is really powerful for you. And if you're in a wheelchair, this practice is equally as powerful. And I really love that accessibility of the practice.
So there's other aspects to yoga too. So I've heard the word yamas and niyamas. Can you explain what those are?
Sure. So there's eight limbs of yoga, and the yamas and niyamas is one of those limbs. And those are the precepts of yogas. It's sort of, you can look at them as the commandments, the do's and don'ts. And so it's about, some of them are about meditation and breathing practices. And some of them are about how you operate in the world. Don't steal, have purity. In other words, cleanliness. And it talks about right sexual activity and direction of your sexual and energetic forces. So it's really sort of the do's and don'ts in the yoga world.
Okay. And so many people have not heard of energy medicine. So how would you describe it to someone who's not ever heard of it before?
Well, it's so interesting because even if you think you haven't heard of energy medicine, you really have heard of it. You just might not have languaged it as such. So if you've ever had an ultrasound, that's energy medicine. If you've had, you know, gallstones or kidney stones, and they've used that sound frequency to break those up, that's energy medicine. If you've ever had an MRI, that's energy medicine. If you've ever had acupuncture or Reiki, or if you've ever listened to music and felt all of your joy energy start to explode, that's energy medicine. So we are energetic beings and everything is energy. That's all there is. The books behind you, the computer that we are talking, interfacing in, the physical body, the car you drive, everything is energy. And so energy medicine is really an umbrella of different practices that speak to directly those energetic forces. So again, a lot of them are used in Western medicine, like those things that I've just named. And a lot of people, you know, acupuncture is now covered by most people's insurance. And that is an energy medicine technique that works directly with one of the nine energy systems of the body. So it's a really profound term that covers a lot of things and a lot of things that you just wouldn't think of that actually are, that are your medicine.
Oh, interesting. Okay. I think like a lot of people have probably heard of Reiki and or healing touch. You know, a lot of nurses will do healing touch in hospitals and think of an acupuncture, of course, you think of as energy medicine, but you're thinking about it in a much broader scope than that.
Yes, and, right? So it is those other things, but absolutely Reiki and healing touch, which are becoming more and more widespread, are really powerful energy medicine techniques. And those are working with the life force energy in the body, what's called prana or chi. They're working with that. In energy medicine yoga, we're working with nine distinct energy systems within the body. So all of those energy systems are run by that same prana or chi that is the life force energy, but they're broken down into very distinct areas and functions in the body. Just like in the physiological body, you have distinct functions, but that all work together. You have, you know, your respiratory system, your pulmonary system, your digestive, your integument, your in, I'm not saying that right, your muscles, nerves. Thank you. So all of those systems, they're distinct, but they also work all together. Nothing works independently. In the same, in the energy body, you've got nine distinct energy systems. So we mentioned the meridians if you get acupuncture. Most yogis have heard of the chakras. That's one of the energy systems of the body. But there are nine complete energy systems, and each one has its distinct function and form and where it resides in the body, and then they all work together. And that's the genius of Donna Eden and her work creating Eden Energy Medicine, which is my tradition and my lineage, is that she didn't just take one system and work on it. So many yogis work with the chakras, but they don't work with the meridians, or they don't work with the Celtic weave or with the aura, and all of those systems work together. And so once you start to treat the holistic energy system of the body, just like in alternative medicine, we treat the holistic physical body and also the energy body, then we have a much more powerful practice because nothing works in a vacuum. Nothing works by itself. Everything is interrelated and interdependent on everything else.
Now that's really interesting to me because I do some energy work in my practice with craniosacral therapy and and then I've received Reiki, you know, Reiki training and that sort of thing. And just one of the things I perceived is that the anatomy of your energy body is equally as complex as the anatomy of your physical body. So it does make a lot of sense that there's more going on than just chakras or, or I work with a couple acupuncturists and they work with meridians all day. But because you can feel these things, there's a lot more going on. The way that energy flows in big cycles, and then there's small little cycles within different tissues, and you know, so that just make a lot of sense to look at it that way.
It really does make a lot of sense. And once you start to get your hands in it, so you do cranial sacral, that's one of my favorite treatments to get. And that really is, you know, you're getting your hands right in the energy systems. People think that these energy systems, you know, the buzzword in the yoga world is the subtle energies or the subtle body, but it's not subtle. It's not subtle at all. It is right there. You can feel it. You can experience it. You can move it. You can feel the effects of it. It's right there. So I really like to encourage people to get the hands in and on the body and with the body, because that's where you feel the energy systems. It's not subtle at all.
Now, it reminds me of, you know, how scientists have been studying yogis and while they meditate and, you know, how they can slow their heart rate down or they can, you know, do all these different things. And when the scientists ask the yogi, well, how do you do that? And their answer is, I can control the flow of prana in my body. And it's like these Western scientists go like, huh, what does that mean? How do you even understand what the yogi's trying to say? Because Western medicine has kind of ignored energy medicine, even though it keeps getting rediscovered all the time. Like Hahnemann discovered it, and Palmer discovered it with chiropractic, and you know, it just keeps getting rediscovered, but they still keep pushing it away.
And really to their detriment, and to the detriment of us, because if they could make those bridges between Western and Eastern medicine, or Western and alternative medicine, the path forward for healing would be so much faster, so much more profound. You know, Western medicine looks at the placebo effect like a problem, like something that disrupts all of their studies, instead of looking at the placebo effect as, wow, this amazing energy that we could harness for healing. They look at it as like a bug in the machine. And that's really the whole problem, is that Western medicine is very mechanistic. It looks at the body as a machine. And so if you get in a car wreck, then you want to go, you know, if you have some kind of blunt trauma, you want Western medicine. You want them to align all the bones and the veins and sew it all together. But if you're talking about something that is more holistic, some an endocrine issue or, something that's going on with the nervous system or a lot of these autoimmune issues, Western medicine doesn't have a handle on those, because those aren't mechanistic ailments. And they haven't made that bridge to understanding that the body is energy, and that we need to start to treat these things with a combination and not just through this, you know, mechanistic lens, as if we're just a machine and replace parts.
Yeah. Yeah. And speaking as a doctor, I know that we're sort of trained to stay within our comfort limits, stay with what we know. And what we're taught, because drug companies pay for 90% of medical education, what we're taught are drugs. And so if there isn't a drug answer to a problem, oftentimes physicians aren't that interested in it, because they don't know much about it. They don't know what to trust, what not to trust. And so that's, they just want to stay in their comfort zone. And that's the issue that I see. And we could talk about that for hours too. But what I was wondering is if you could, let's start by giving our listeners and possibly viewers, we'll have to decide, like an experience of a simple example of combining energy medicine with simple yoga practice. Can you walk us through?
Sure, I'd be happy to. So I'm just going to step back from the computer a little bit so that you can see a little bit more clearly. So I'm going to share with you what's called the wake up. And this is the essential baseline energetic technique that you want to do. So energy follows certain patterns in the body. And if it's not going along those optimal patterns, then you're working at a deficit as much as 50%. And so you can think about, you know, like freeways, right? So you drive along these freeways in the direction that you're supposed to go. But if you go the wrong way down a one-way street, you're going to run into trouble. And that's the same thing that happens in the body. Energy follows certain rules and it follows certain patterns. And it needs to follow these patterns in order for us to work well. So this little four-part technique that I'm going to show you is called the wake up. And what it does is it wakes up all of the energy systems in your body, gets them moving forward, because oftentimes our energy is actually moving away from the direction that we want it to go, which is why we get tired or we get depressed or we get sick and we can't get well. So we get all the energies awake, we get them moving forward, and then we get them crossing over. And that is crucial, that crossover pattern. Just like your brain operates opposite sides of the body, all the way down to the DNA, which does this spiral crossing over. Every cell has this crossover pattern. And if your energies aren't crossing over, you're also working at that deficit. So the root cause of every disease pattern in the body, everything from pimples to Parkinson's, is that your energy isn't moving forward and crossing over. And so if you want to start to heal anything, you have to get that happening. And so this little technique is a way to start to do that. So the first thing that you're going to do is you're going to breathe in the nose and out the mouth. That'll be the breathing pattern for this whole thing. And I'll cue you on it, but I want to cue you that at the beginning. Breathing in the nose and out the mouth. And then you're going to find your collarbones and drop down. There are these hollows right below the tips of the collarbones. And you press in. And if those feel sore, chances are your energy is not running forward. So you'll start to thump those with some vigor, really strong, and have that same breathing pattern in the nose and out the mouth. And this is a junction point of all the meridian systems in the body and all of the energy systems pass through here and get your energies moving forward. Then you're going to come right to the center of the chest. This is over the thymus gland. Again, in Western medicine, they say that this gland is irrelevant, but the truth is the more you thump this and activate this gland, it's responsible for your immune system activating, generating, and activating your T cells to understand what invaders are in the body and what is part of you. One more breath in the nose and out the mouth. Then go to the side of the body, right where the bra strap would land there, sort of the mid-chest
region. Oh, I forgot to put mine on this morning.
No. Everyone knows kind of where they are, even if you're not wearing one. And you're going to do that same breathing pattern in the nose and out the mouth. And these pores help to digest and assimilate everything that you take in the body. Information from this whole summit series, every food and every drug and every drink and every experience. And in order for those to be digested, these points need to be strong. One more breath in the nose and out the mouth. Then you're going to go to the points right under the eyes on the cheekbones, and you're going to tap there, again, with some strength. And those points might be sore. This helps to ground the energy. One more breath. Good. Shake it off. Now we've got our energy awake and moving forward. Now we want to get it to cross over. So you're going to march in place, and you're going to tap the same hand to the same leg. You can do this in a chair. And if you can't move, if you have limited mobility, you can visualize this, and the energy will start to move. Stop, shake your hands off, and now cross over. Right to left, left to right. If you want to move more vigorously, you can lift the leg up really high. If you don't want to move as much, you can just be sitting in your chair and tapping, getting the energies to cross over the body, and that same breath in the nose, out the mouth.
That's good. I forget to do that breathing while I'm doing these things.
Yeah, the breathing is really important. It starts to get the energy circulating around the core of the body. Shake that off. Last two things. Going to bring your hands right to the low body, right in front of the pubic bone. You can either touch the body or have your hands off a few inches into the biofield, into your aura. and set an intention for yourself for your day or for the meeting you're about to go into or the big presentation you're about to give or your tennis match. Set your intention. And then inhale, draw your hands right up the front of the body. Exhale out the mouth and smooth your hands wide out into your field.
So you took your hands all the way up above your head.
All the way up above my head, and then I'm smoothing them wide around my whole body. And we'll do that one more time. Inhale, smooth right up the center line. Exhale, wide open.
You put your palms down as you're doing it?
Yeah, my palms are smoothing right down into the field.
Right down, yeah.
And now I want to lock all that good energy in. So one finger comes in the belly button. One finger goes right between the eyebrows of the third eye. Press those fingers in slightly and pull up, and three deep breaths in the nose and out the mouth. Shake your hands up. And you're ready for your day.
Well, thank you. Well, I really feel that.
Feel it, don't you? And you can do it in just a couple, 2 or 3 minutes. You can do it in the shower. You can do it in line at the grocery store if you don't mind people looking at you. If they look at you, then they're going to say, what are you doing? And you say, let me share with you this beautiful thing. Because the more that we share it and spread it, the more people start to get their energies aligned. And the whole world becomes just a better, brighter place. So do this often and get your own energies. Especially if you're sick at all or depressed, well, often what's happening is your energy isn't forward and isn't crossing over. So you might need to do this whole thing 2 or 3 times during the day, because one of the other rules of energy is that it follows patterns and it forms habits. And so there are good habits that we have, and then there are habits that are really challenging and that make it difficult for us to move forward in our lives. And being depressed and disease patterns are also habits in our energy fields before they become physical habits. So if you want to start to break those, do this whole little wake up 2, 3, 4 times a day. And then all of the other things that you're doing for your caretaking and well-being will really start to take hold in the body and in the mind. So it'll help everything.
Oh, nice. When I started reading your books, this idea of integrating energy medicine with yoga was one of those kind of bonk your forehead, why didn't I think of it sort of things. And because this makes so much sense. And just to put them together. So really, has nobody else thought of this before you? Are you, as far as you know, the first one to put these two together like this?
Well, you know, it's funny that you say that, because my sister said that to me when the first book came out, in the way only family can. She's like, really? I can't believe you discovered this. You created this. It was a bit of a backhanded compliment, but I appreciated what she was saying, and I appreciate what you're saying as well. And here's the thing. I'm the first person that really collated and put it together and brought it out in such a cohesive way. But there were people, I have one of my senior teachers who just graduated from my master's program. Her name is Molly Silver, and she's an incredible teacher and practitioner. And she started putting energy medicine into her yoga classes, maybe around the same time or even before me. And a couple of other teachers of Donna's had done the same thing as well. They did different things and some of the same things, but nobody really put the whole thing together in this cohesive, fully formed way. So it's certainly been out floating in the fields, That is how things happen. You know, there's gets to be some critical mass, and then it just emerges. So I was the lucky one to emerge it.
So how was that discovery for you?
You know, it was pretty incredible. I was teaching at Norwich University, which is the oldest private military college in the country. And my students were getting ready to go off to theaters of war. And I wanted to give them all the tools that I could so that they could stay grounded and stay with themselves and not fall victim to some of the issues and problems and struggles that so many soldiers do. And so I was just giving them all the tools I had. And what I was discovering, you know, there's very stressful lives at university, because not only are they in Army, Navy, Air Force, and Marines, they have a full load of class schedule, and most of them are in sports as well. They're sleeping 3 or 4 hours a night, if that. And they were coming back to my classes with the most incredible responses to what they were doing. And at that point, I knew what I was doing was much larger and more profound than any of the yoga that I had been teaching up until that point. So that was kind of my aha moment of, wow. I already knew that it was profound for me in my experience, but when I shared it out with people that didn't have that, you know, preconceived idea, and they were coming back with these results, that's when I really knew. And, you know, if you go to my website and you see some of those testimonials, it blows my mind every day, the experiences that people share with me. Yoga teachers that have been studying and practicing and teaching for 10, 20, 30, 40 years. I just graduated an 82-year-old teacher. And they share with me all the time that this was the missing link, that this was more profound and more powerful than any type of yoga that they had ever practiced before. So it's really, I mean, the proof is in the pudding, and I'm still wowed every day. I don't take any of this for granted. I'm always continuing to evolve it and to grow it and to learn myself from my teachers and students too.
Oh, that's so exciting, because especially to hear that from these experienced yoga teachers, because that's going to be my next question, was that this, you know, the practice of the full scope of yoga, all 8 branches of yoga, when people practice all those together, I mean, that's been healing people and helping people attain enlightenment for centuries, right? And so I was going to ask, well, what advantages do you see by adding the energy medicine to that practice? Now, as you said, in the United States, most of the, you know, the other 7 branches probably don't get practiced so much. But
definitely
even to advanced teachers.
Yeah, no, it's true. I mean, there's definitely that emphasis on the physical. There are a lot of yoga practices that teach profound, you know, pranayama, which is the breathing techniques, and meditation, which are the more powerful techniques in yoga, even though most people think, you know, doing a one-arm handstand is the most powerful thing you can do. It's really these meditation practices and these breathing practices that bring us the changes that we're looking for and that unification that we're looking for. But when we bring these energy practices in such a simple and accessible way, you know, I mentioned earlier that yoga is an energetic practice, but for the years and years and years that I studied before I found energy medicine, it was taught to me in such an esoteric way. It was such a sort of hidden and difficult to access, right? So, you know, you're studying these advanced practices that you're never gonna, or I will be speak personally, I was never gonna be able to bring these advanced, very esoteric techniques into my yoga classes. And I ask that to my teachers, my students who are teachers all the time. You know, I say, who's ever brought, you know, X, Y, and Z into their classes? And they have just even, you know, a subtle understanding themselves of, you know, of what the doshas are, what the koshas are, and how they can bring that into a class. And, you know, nobody's ever shared with me a way that they've brought those into a regular yoga class. Energy medicine yoga, the techniques are so simple. I mean, look what we just did in that 2 or 3 minutes. It's so simple, tapping, thumping, deep self-massage, these different techniques that are so accessible. So all of a sudden, the energy components of everything illuminate and wake up in a way that they never were before. And that is what gives people these profound jumps. So it's not that yoga itself isn't powerful, it's that it's, you know, one of my students came up with, it's yoga electrified. It really does. It takes everything that you do and just brings it up and lights the whole thing up. It's like when you decorate the whole tree and then you plug it in and then it's alive and the things are moving and dancing and spinning and it's lit up. That's what energy medicine yoga is. So, you know, regular yoga, you've got a beautiful Christmas tree, but energy medicine yoga, that's when the lights come on.
Oh, that's a great analogy. Yeah. And also, and I've run into that too, that sort of belief that these other aspects of yoga are really esoteric and they're occult and they're incomprehensible and unattainable and yada, yada, yada. I mean, just sort of having that belief makes them that way too. And you've been able to go around those.
I think those advanced techniques really are, a lot of them really are esoteric. And, you know, for thousands of years, these advanced practices weren't taught. They were only taught to the very exclusive, upper castes, and they were never taught to women. And so, you know, a lot of these techniques really were meant to be hidden and secretive. And so they're not that easy for the regular yogi who's going to, you know, an hour and a half class at her local gym. She's never going to, or he's never going to find the roads into these and the keys into these. But this work is so simple. It's like everybody can do it and have it. And that's what I want to happen. I want, you know, these aren't hidden practices any longer. These should be practiced by everybody, no matter whether you're a yogi or a construction worker or a teacher or a doctor. Like, everybody can.
Or a soldier.
Or a soldier, exactly.
Yeah. So we are focusing on building resilience in this summit. And you specifically cite that building resilience is one of the benefits of energy medicine yoga. So, but what does resilience mean to you?
That's a beautiful question. You know, in the world today, we are constantly barraged with information and challenges and difficulties and honestly, a lot of really traumatic experiences and information. And in order for us to be able to move forward and do the work that we want to do and are meant to do in this world, we have to be able to stay focused and present even with these challenging and difficult experiences. And so I think back to those childhood toys. Do you remember the Weeble Wobbles?
I don't know if I ever had one.
They're these little creatures. You never had a Weeble Wobble? So they're these little beings, and they're kind of egg-shaped, and you push them over, but they bounce right back up again. And the whole tagline was, Weebles wobble, but they don't fall down. And that's really what I mean by resilience, that weeble and wobble, but we don't fall down. So, you know, the body has this mechanism called coming into homeostasis, right? So that right. Everything that you do takes you out of that center line. Every bite of food you eat, every breath you take, every conversation you have, and then on the line for more challenging things, everything you do takes you out of that center line. And if you have a strong resilience, you can easily come back to that center line. You can wobble, but then you come right back to center line. If you don't have that strong inner resilience, then what happens was somebody knocks you off of your center and you stay off. And then somebody knocks you again and you stay here. And then all of a sudden you're kind of like crumpled up in a corner and you've lost your ability to heal, to thrive, and maybe even to just operate in your day-to-day life. You've got a weakened system, which means a weakened immune system, a weakened nervous system, and all of those things now leave you susceptible to all sorts of pathogens and disease patterns, that things that are going to come in and kind of overtake your body and your mind, right? So we get susceptible in our mind as well to being depressed, to being angry, all of these things. If we don't have the ability to release all of them and come back to this clear channel, then we're just challenged. And we have all of these problems to arise. And then we have to all of our energy just dealing with the challenge of being alive. Instead of coming back to center line, we're strong, knocked off, we weeble and we wobble, but we don't fall down. So the goal. And that's what what resilience is. And we really can build that resilience. I've heard from many of my soldiers after they deployed through some harrowing events, and they have told that what saved them over and over and over was this work, so that they had that touchstone to come back to. They knew what clarity, and they knew how to get back there, and that's resilience.
Wow. Well, as you were speaking, I was thinking that, you know, the biggest challenge that we're dealing with as a medical profession is this onslaught of chronic illness. And one of the last surveys by the National Institute of Health showed that over 50% of Americans are now living with a chronic disease. And half of those are living with more than one chronic disease at a time. And as you said earlier, that the mechanistic medicine has not been very good at helping people with these chronic diseases. So chronic means it's there for a long time. And a chronic disease, by definition, resists our attempts to treat it, or else it would get better and go away. But chronic diseases also take a long time to develop. And so what you were describing about being knocked off center and not being able to come back, and just all these things keep adding up and adding up and adding up, and pretty soon you've got these chronic diseases. And so it sounds like you've got a pretty good answer for people living with chronic disease that conventional medicine doesn't have to offer people.
Well, you know, certainly another pathway and hope. I do believe that. You know, it really is interesting what you said with these diseases. Typically cancer is growing in the body for anywhere from 12 to 16 years before it is detected. That's a really long time for something to be brewing in the body. And one of the things that we do in energy medicine yoga is this sort of daily habitual check-in with the body so that you notice right away if there's something that's slightly off. Your body is constantly giving you cues and information, right? But we just learn to, or we just ignore them. Oh, I just have a bad gut. That's me. I can't eat anything. I have stomach aches all the time. Well, that's your body giving you information. You don't have stomach aches. You have something that you need to deal with that's showing up in your stomach. And in Ayurveda, the sister science of yoga, all disease starts in the gut, right? And we see the research now coming with the microbiome and all of that sort of thing. But all of these chronic illnesses, you know, as I mentioned before, one of the rules of energy is that it forms habits. And so you get into this habit of you headaches or stomach aches or, you know, oh, my trick elbow, it's just, you know, that's just me, or my bad knee, that's just me. That's not just you, that's your body giving you information. And if you don't respond to that and have a conversation with that and find out what you can do about that, it gets worse and worse and worse, and then something happens. And, you know, one of the other things is that any pain in the body is energy that is stuck. And so the first rule of energy is that it needs to move. If it doesn't move, so back to our traffic metaphor, it's like there's an accident and then all the cars back up behind it. And then there's a traffic jam for miles and miles down the road. And that causes all kinds of problems in the whole supply chain. These people aren't getting to work. These people aren't picking the kids up from daycare. These people are, you know, can't get to their doctor's appointment. Not to mention that these people in the initial accident are in trauma and in pain and suffering now because of that initial accident. So there's a whole, you know, chain of events that happens when energy gets stuck, and then it backs up and it can't flow in its natural patterns. The beautiful thing about this work is that you start to repattern the energy and you start to then unlock that gridlock that's happening in the body. And I'll wind back for a moment to how when I first met Donna Eden, and I was at a real crossroads in my life, and I could have gone and studied more advanced yoga practices and techniques to learn how to get through what I was going through, or I could study with Donna. Now, Donna healed herself of MS. That's one of the most challenging diseases in Western medicine. Yeah. And they basically have no response for how to do that. And they didn't back then either. They told her, get your affairs in order, find someone to raise your kids. You are not going to be alive for much longer. And she took matters into her own hands and healed herself with all of these techniques that then she created into becoming Eden Energy Medicine. And I consider that a miracle. She literally is the miracle person. And from her, all of these other miraculous practices have been born. So we really do have the power to heal anything. And I read those miracle healing stories all the time. Cancer's gone in 24 hours. I mean, there's amazing things. The body is resilient just in its own nature, and anything is possible. Miracles are just, we don't have the mechanism to explain what happened, but we're starting to get those mechanisms, and a lot of it is the invisible power of energy. And so I think, you know, it's not to say that if you've got a chronic disease and you start practicing EM yoga, you're going to be healed immediately. But I'll tell you this, you're going to have hope. You're going to have channels and lines of communication that are going to start to open up. You're going to start to feel movements and shifting and changes. And you have a much better likelihood of finding those solutions and those healings that have not been offered to you in the Western medical paradigm.
I really appreciate what you have to say. That's so true. But anxiety is also becoming an epidemic, especially seems like in younger people. So what do you think is behind this spreading epidemic? What do you see from your perspective?
You know, I mean, I can give you some techniques for anxiety, but more important than that is your question of where this is arising from. And I really think the biggest issue causing most of our problems, I almost want to say all, but I'm not going to go that far, but most, is our extreme disconnection from nature of which we arise. We are completely disconnected from our own nature and the natural world. Yeah. And our destroying of the natural world is a parallel to the destruction of the physical body as well. And so they're not separate things. Again, so this is that yogic philosophy, is we are all one. We are not separate from the earth. So we can't continue to pour glyphosates all over the earth and poison the earth with chemicals and deforest the earth and strip mine the earth and do all of these incredibly intensive practices that are destroying the earth and think that we, which are made up of the earth, are going to thrive. It's just an impossibility. And our disconnection from the earth in our minds leads then to this anxiety, like we know something's wrong. And we don't know quite how to deal with it, how to resolve it. We have this disconnect from nature and from ourselves. And it's really important that we start to reconnect. One of the first things for, you know, there's a few primary tenets to healing, and one of them is to be out in nature. And you start to see now, I mean, doctors are prescribing walking in the forest, right? All the things it does, it lowers your blood pressure, you know, it helps your breathing, all of those things. But being in nature helps you to ground, helps you to come back into resonance with the primary resonance structure of the earth. There's actually an energetic resonance of the earth. It's called the Schumann resonance. And we resonate with that. And when we don't resonate with that, we get sick. And so just coming into nature is the first step. And then I really think we need to reconcile all, we have a lot of work to do, but it doesn't have to be overwhelming. But we have to reconcile with the traumas that we have created in ourselves, in our families, in our histories, in the world, all of the wars, the destruction of the planet, you know, the oppression of peoples all over the planet. We need to reconcile them, and we can't keep continuing to have this us versus them mentality. And you see just in the United States right now how that is happening. You know, there's this group that wants this and this group that wants that. But really, everybody wants the same thing at the root of it. And all of these prejudices are learned. We don't come with any built-in prejudices. And so we need to unlearn those prejudices. And we visit those same rages and angers and hatefulness on ourselves first, and then we bring them out into the world. And until we start to find that understanding in ourselves and stop that separation in ourselves, we're never going to be able to heal the separation that's happening in countries all over the world and in the entire world itself. We're just one ecosystem. And so we really need to, you know, that the health of the physical body is not different from the health of the planet. And so we have to look at both of those at the same time.
I really appreciate you saying that because, it's a theme I talk about a lot too, is that, you know, we're living in this dysfunctional society and yet we're trying to be healthy as individuals while we're living in this dysfunctional community. And we've got to heal the community, which would include healing the earth to our relationship with the earth. So you're right. It's that disconnect. And I think, again, to build on what you're saying, there's a part of us that knows something's wrong, that knows something's off. And knowing something's off, but not knowing what it is exactly, creates that anxiety. And I think a lot of people are feeling that angst and they can't quite put their finger on what it is. And I bet you're right. It's that just disconnect, and it's gotten so pervasive.
Yeah, it's a huge problem. And so then if you take it back into the lens of energy medicine and energy medicine yoga, anxiety is part of the system that governs our blood vessels, right? So you think about all of the, like, the hypertension and the heart attacks and all of that. But it's also governed by and governs a system that is part of our immune system, and also the kind of what's considered the warrior part of our immune system. And so that part of us that discerns what is self and what is other, and is the one that mounts the immune system response in the body. But when it's overactive and when it's out of balance, then it causes all kinds of havoc in the body, from allergies all the way up to autoimmune issues. And the planet is in that overactive place right now, where we are identifying everything as other and mounting this huge immune system response, or this huge warlike response, which is what the immune system does when there's an invader. And so all of that puts this entire sort of ecosystem out of balance, because we're looking at everything as the other. And that creates an incredible amount of anxiety, because the body stops being able to discern what is good for you and what is not good for you. And so it riles everything up, and there's extreme anxiety, which then goes either backwards into anger and rage, or forwards into worry and destruction. And it creates this whole imbalance. And that's where we're at right now. We're in an incredibly imbalanced time. And that's really what that anxiety is. We know it. We know it. We feel it. We don't quite know what to do about it. And that goes, I mean, it's a huge mission, but I really want to start.
But you're
today.
On it. I can tell.
I'm trying. I'm doing my best. You know, this is how I bring my work into the world. And I was only able to do that after I came back into that balance and resilience by doing this work myself, because I was also out of balance in a huge way and had major traumatic events happen to me in my life. And, you know, part of healing trauma, people are afraid to even talk about trauma or to deal with it in any way, because we feel like, I don't want to open up Pandora's box. It's so scary to look at. But we have to look at it, because if we just continue to press it down and press it down and press it down, that, again, it creates all kinds of problems. And we're just seeing them rampant through our whole world right now, as well as in our own bodies. We see, you know, autoimmune diseases going through the roof, allergies through the roof, autism through the roof. All of these things are the physical responses to not having dealt with the energetic issues that are underlying them. So we have an opportunity to do it, and we also have a responsibility, because, you know, otherwise we're going down a bad way. And I like to look at it as more hopeful, that we have the opportunity and we have the tools and the skills to really address these. So let's do that now while we can.
Perfect. So how would you suggest people use energy medicine then to help themselves with their anxiety? Energy medicine, yoga.
Yeah. So do you want me to give you the technique? It's so powerful. I have to give it to you now, right? Because I've talked about it. I've got to give it to you now. It's called bringing down the flame, right? And that's exactly what it is. So
is that in your prescription book too? I don't know.
It's in the prescription. Yeah, okay. It's in the fire element section. So So anxiety is a fire element imbalance. And you think about that. Fire is an incredibly powerful element. It is the most transformative of all the elements. But when it's not bounded, when it's bounded, it cooks your food, it warms your house. But when it's not bounded, it's a wildfire and it's massive destruction.
It's an explosion.
So what we want to do is bring that flame down so that it is under our control, and then it becomes one of the most, if not the most powerful element that we have. It's transformed human culture by having fire in our control, not out of our control. So I'm going to step away again from the computer a little bit so that you can see me. And the sound for this one is HA, an aspirate. Sounds like this. So that's it exactly. And you can just make that sound. If you're feeling anxious and you don't have the room or space to do this pose that I'm going to show you, you can just sit in your car and make that sound. Mm. But here's what I'm going to show you to do. If you have anxiety, you're going to inhale, sweep your arms all the way out and up, tent your fingers, and bring your thumbs down to the center of the crown, making that sound. So let's do that again. Sweep up.
You've got your fingertips together and your thumbs touching, kind of.
Your fingertips are all together and your thumbs are
making a pyramid. Yeah.
Touching the top of the head. Then you're going to take another breath and you're going to bring the thumbs to the third eye,
which is right between your, like right above where your two eyes, eyebrows come together. Yeah.
Exactly. Then you're going to take another breath and bring them right to the center of the heart, center of the chest. You're going to take another breath and bring your thumbs to your navel. Then you're going to flatten your hands over the first three chakras. So the thumbs are still at the navel and the index fingers are right at the top of the pubic bone. You're going to take three breaths here. And you just sweep off.
That's very calming inside.
Very calming.
Yeah. Thank you for that. Two exercises. Wow. Mm-hmm. So I know we're getting close, but there's this burning question that I have just personally, because in my opinion, many energy workers that I meet, they're constantly confusing energy with consciousness. And so in your mind, I'm curious what you see are the differences between energy and consciousness.
Wow, that's a massively huge question. You know, it's so interesting because consciousness has not yet been defined. The mechanism for what makes us aware and conscious has not yet been found. So it's almost an unanswerable question. Certainly we need energy to be moving through the body for us to be alive. But the levels of consciousness, you know, my dog has an incredible consciousness and awareness, but, you know, even though he's really smart, he's not reading books and he's not, you know, planning the next vacation and he's not, you know, doing the things that we do with what we consider our conscious mind. But you know, the science coming out right now is that everything has consciousness. It's just different levels of consciousness. Even atoms have a consciousness and a way of aligning and a way of sort of understanding the world around them to their level. Rocks and trees, like everything that is alive, which is in essence everything, has a consciousness, but it's different levels and different qualities of it. So, you know, energy is what runs and illuminates everything, but it's much different from consciousness. And you know, one of my teachers, the great physicist Nassim Haramein, uses the word awareness. He likes that word better than the unconscious mind. You know, the awareness. Do we have awareness? Are we able to recognize what's going on? And so, I mean, we could have a whole, and I would love to have a whole conversation about the conscious mind and the unconscious or the unaware mind. But I think they're very different than energy, even though you need energy to have consciousness. The mechanism that makes us conscious is still not really known. So it's really hard to say. And certainly I would not say that the two are the same at all, because energy is everywhere and illuminates everything. And consciousness, as I've said, is just very, has a different hierarchy, and it's not really firmly understood. You know, there's different ideas of how humans developed our consciousness in the first place. And there's some ideas that, you know, we actually have a DNA structure that is from a non-human force, like an alien force, that is what brought us our consciousness. And there's other ideas that there were different psychotropic drugs that humans ingested and that brought us consciousness. There's mushrooms and different plants that change the chemistry of the brain and open up various areas of consciousness. So there's some theories that early humans ate some of these substances and then awakened their consciousness. But that's sort of, to define a word with the word itself doesn't fully define it. So that's kind of a trick question there at the end.
Yeah, well, it is. But, and you know, the Vedic model actually has something to say about that. You mentioned the koshas, right? And pranamaya kosha is your vital energy body, which they see as, so kosha means sheath, and so it's the sheath right under your physical body, which is the anamaya kosha. But at the very root of the human being in that model is an aspect of us that doesn't have kosha or maya in the name, and that's Atman. And Atman is sometimes translated as your true self, but it's also seen as your personal way into, or your personal connection with the universal consciousness that created all of existence. And so I kind of see that there's this universal consciousness that's essentially infinite, and that we have access to certain aspects of it. And what you're saying is, everything in material existence is expressing some aspects of that pure undifferentiated consciousness, and it's whatever aspects they're expressing is what makes it what they are. So a piece of paper or a tree or a flower or a molecule, you know, they're expressing different aspects of that consciousness. And
go ahead. Oh, I think that's true. And I think, it's actually sort of two different questions to ask. I mean, if you talk about that Vedic philosophy of how humans came to recognize themselves, right? So first there was the one, mm-hmm. that had no differentiation, and then a part of that one broke off and then looked back and could see that there was something separate from itself, and then it started to go back and forth, the self seeing the other seeing the self, and then there was the two. And from the two, then we've got that idea that there is separation, and from the two comes the three, and the three comes the many. So, but that's different from how consciousness exists and how it developed. Those are sort of two different questions. And, my understanding, and it's interesting because the ancient text is coming very close to what modern science is starting to finally figure out. But there is the ether, right, that connects everything. And that ether is alive, right? That space is not a vacuum. It is connected through with this field. And this field is vibrating with energy. At the very smallest level, the smallest level that we can perceive it, are called these Planck oscillators. They're these very, 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 very teeny. That's like 100 trillion Plancks in one atom. So they're like incredibly teeny, and they're oscillating. So they're making sound and they're putting out light, right? And all of the information of the universe is contained in these oscillators, right? And this is what everything is connected. That's the connective tissue, if you will, or the field, or the lake if you will, that through which we all arise. So we are made up of that same consciousness that connects everything in the universe, and we arise from that. And so that could be considered that that is the Atman, the individual soul that arises from the soup that is everything. And it also, it's one and it's separate. It sees back that there is this field from which it arose, but then it is also individuated from that field. And the whole journey is to get back to the one. But that still doesn't explain how consciousness arose. So that's a couple, I mean, you know, there's all of this philosophy around everything, but it doesn't give us the mechanism, which isn't to say that I mean, obviously consciousness is real, and that is considered the hard problem still in that scientific field, is how consciousness arose. Like, how are we consciousness? It's the hard problem, and nobody has solved it yet.
Well, that's true. So if our listeners wanted to learn more about energy medicine yoga, what resources would you recommend?
So if you go to my website, energymedicineyoga.net or emyoga.net, there's tons of resources on that site. I've got links to my books and my classes and all my online classes, and I've got all kinds of free resources on YouTube and Facebook and all of that sort of thing, and all of those links are there. So that's the easiest one-stop place where you can find everything that I'm doing and find all of my teachers. We have links to where all of my teachers are and how to become an EM yoga teacher if you want to go down that path as well, and help us spread the word to help heal the world. So yeah,
that's a Freudian slip. Yeah.
That is a Freudian slip.
So I just want to say too, before we move on, I really, really appreciate your answer to that question about energy and consciousness. It's actually clearly more thought through than just anybody else I've ever asked that question to. So I appreciate that.
Yeah, I appreciate you asking the tough questions. It's good. It's fun for me.
Yeah, so I don't want this conversation to end, but we kind of have to for time. And so the last question is, if you could leave our listeners with three tidbits of advice on how to be more resilient in these anxious times, what would that be? What would they be, the three little tidbits?
One, do the wake up. Do it every day, do it three times a day. Start working with your energy and getting your energy working for you, because it starts here, right? That's the yogic tenet, and I really believe that. Healing starts here. Once we start to heal ourselves.
She's tapping her heart, by those of you who can't see.
Yeah, and once we start to heal ourselves, then we can bring that healing out into the world. And part of healing is bringing that resilience. So do that, do the wake up every day.
Okay.
Second thing I would say is start a gratitude journal or a gratitude practice. You know, our brains are hardwired for negativity. That was how we survived eons ago. But now having that hardwire for negativity doesn't support us. And so if you start a practice of gratitude, whether you write it down or you just sit quietly and, you know, three times a day or three times come up with something that you're grateful for, it really does start to rewire the brain for more positivity and joy. And that also helps to bring that anxiety down once you realize how many blessings you really do have in your life. And especially if you're going through a really difficult time, you know, in some of my darkest hours, the only thing that saved me was thinking, what can I be grateful for? What one thing? And I would, you know, sometimes it was just, I'm still breathing. Or I'd be curled up on the couch with my dog and I'd say, I love my dog so much. That gratitude for having that little puppy in my life was enough that I could get through the day. So especially if you're in a challenging time, find the things that you're grateful for and remind yourself every day of those things and think of new things every day that you're grateful for. And the third thing, gosh, it's a toss-up. I can say four things. Okay. I would say get out into nature. Even if you're living in a city and you don't have access to a park, there's always a tree on a city street. And go up to that tree and lean against that tree and put your hands on that tree. They've discovered now that trees actually have a heartbeat. and they put out an energy. They have a field around them, just like we have a field. It's called the biofield or the aura. A tree also has a field around it. And if you just go and lean up against that tree, even for 2 or 3 minutes, it starts to change your whole energy field and brings you again back to that resilience, back to that energy of the tree, that calm, graceful, standing proud, standing still, calmly watching everything that's going on around it. So I would say, and if you have the ability to get out into deep nature, to a river, to a park, to a mountain, to a lake, to the ocean, anywhere, if you can do that, spend as much time in nature as you can. That's really, really powerful. Gosh, there's so many tools I want to give you. I'm just going to stay with those three because I don't want to overwhelm. I think those are really important. Get your energy to start to work for you. Get your gratitude practice happening and spend some time in nature, large or small. And you'll start to see your nervous system will start to change and calm down. And then, you know, you could always grab one of my books or take a class with me and learn some more tools that will help you on your way.
Yes, thank you so much. I really, really appreciate you sharing your wisdom with us today.
Well, and, thank you. It was super fun.
I think that you have so much to offer. So I'm really happy that we can help with spreading the word. So through this summit.
Yay. Well, thank you. It's a pleasure to speak to your whole audience. I love the work that you're doing all to help us up level and get more good and centered and healed so that we can really have a full world that we're all just joyful and present and at peace within. That's my hope. So thank you as well.
Thank you.